Blog Talk Radio.
Join me, Dahl Arntzen, your host, Fridays, the Alaskan Patriot Network. I will bring you conservative views and news, both at home here in Alaska and around the world. So be sure to tune in Fridays, 2 to 5 p.m. Alaska Daylight Time, the Alaskan Patriot Network.
Tune in to the show, The Right View, every Friday from 6 to 9 p.m.
Food waste is one of the most easily solvable problems, literally the low-hanging fruit of environmentalism. Pardon the pun, it's my job.
About 20% of all produce never makes it off the farm.
It's because they just look a little funny.
A little weird, but when you cut into it, it's perfectly good food.
It's just a total shame. It's totally good stuff.
We buy ugly produce directly from farms that often would go to waste because supermarkets won't buy it because of how it looks, and we deliver it to people's doors.
I didn't know that there was beauty standards for an apple.
This isn't that ugly at all. Like, that's the most common first box, like, complaint we get.
We change that. We educate people. We show them how amazing these fruits and vegetables are.
Have food delivered to your house.
Box of produce every week.
And it's more affordable.
At a very reasonable price.
Cheaper than the grocery store.
I spend a lot less time in grocery stores.
It's an adventure every time that you open your box.
High quality produce.
There's nothing wrong with the produce.
And they taste exactly the same, if not better.
Save those fruits and vegetables that get wasted every year.
And it's delivered to your door, like...
But what? Why wouldn't you do?
Please go to our website, freedomizerradio.live, and sign up for Imperfect Foods today. Use our promo code and get money off your first order. Go ahead and get some organic and all-natural meats, dairy, snacks, breads, and non-GMO produce.
Hi. I am Broccoli Man. I want to tell you about the upcoming food shortage. We are going to have a worldwide depression thanks to COVID lockdowns. You need to have a food supply. Don't wait in a food line and get a microchip. You need to grow your own. The easiest and best way is with Ground with a Garden. Ground with a Garden. Grow your own hydroponic garden indoors or outside in a vertical container garden. You all know me. I am serious about my broccoli and non-GMO food. I spend long days fighting globalist crime rings. This gardening solution is easy and does not take a lot of time. Trust me, you will be thankful you did it. That is groundwithagarden.com. Go there today. Protect your family and lessen the effects of the global food shortage. Groundwithagarden.com.
Okay, one more time. This is your foot. This is shoes. This is your foot in shoes.
I can't move.
Any questions?
A little help.
This public service announcement brought to you by Zero Shoes. Feel the freedom, feel the fun, feel the world in Zero Shoes.
Okay, class, we want to talk about what we learned during the lockdown. The first question is, what did we learn during the quarantine, kids? Susie.
That government overreach is real.
What about you, Johnny? We went from home of the brave to home of the government slave. And you, Michael?
We need to refresh the tree of liberty.
What about you, Diane?
So many sheep are willing to give up their rights because of a little fear.
Very good, class.
Hello, Freedomizers. I am Broccoli Man. When I am not fighting crime, I listen to the Proof Negative radio show.
I am the Wild River. Not only do I forbid you to listen to Freedomizer Radio and the Proof Negative radio show, I am going to demand you wear a mask and get your naked body scan. We need to protect the One World Government. You getting the real information hurts a crime syndicate. Do not listen to Proof Negative. You must now disrobe this instant so I can check your person for a constitution or cash money.
Anyway, listen to Proof Negative on Freedomizer Radio. Weeknights 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. 6 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time. FreedomizerRadio.com.
Now, back to Proof Negative on Freedomizer Radio. Welcome to the Proof Negative Radio Show, right here on FreedomizerRadio.com. Now sit back and enjoy the show.
everybody. Welcome back to another great night here on Freedomizer Radio. Of course, I'm your host, Proof Negative, the big kahuna here on Freedomizer. I want to thank everybody so much for finding us today. Today is Thursday, so Lorianne will join us in just a second here. And if you have anything you want to talk about here, feel free to call in. The number here is 319-527-6208. And just press lucky number 1 on your phone, and I will make it a point to bring you into the conversation. So, Lorianne, what's the word on the street out there?
Hey, hey, hey. Well, I finished up jury duty today, as you know. I didn't know if I was going to be able to make it because today would be the last day, and I didn't know how long it would go. But thankfully, we wrapped things up this afternoon, and so I was able to be here as planned. This is my first time that I've ever actually been selected as a juror. Not the first time I've been called, but the first time I was selected. So that was pretty interesting. Really didn't think that I would be. But hey, you know, just when you think you're not going to be selected, you get selected.
Yeah, there was once where I made it to the final 12, but they only wanted 8 jurors, and then I was one of the 4 that they removed.
Yeah, we had 12. And we actually, there were 13, so that there would be one alternate, but like right away, day one, that alternate had conflicts or something, and so it was like, you know, the judge was kind of like, please show up. We don't want to have to do this all over again. So we all did. None of us got sick. Everybody, you know, all the jurors were on time and stuff. And so it all worked out pretty well. And it was a pretty, like, you know, I guess I could get into detail on it or whatever, but it was a civil case, not a criminal case, which that was different. And, you know, so the way things operate with a civil case. And this was like one of the first civil cases that the court has been able to do because of all the COVID stuff. They were focusing on the criminal cases. And so civil cases had been postponed for like, you know, a year and a half with all this COVID stuff. So this was the first one, and the interesting thing is we were actually off-site, so we had to go into the courthouse to go through security and stuff and then walk across the street to this kind of ballroom venue, and, you know, it was kind of like, you know, for conferences, ballroom parties, you know, to rent out. And so they rented out this ballroom. And our juror room actually had, like, you know, lights up and a disco ball and everything, like, for a reception. So it was kind of funny for, you know, and so everything was backwards. But I actually liked it because I think it's because we were off-site and out of the courtroom that they were a lot less strict about the mask wearing. You know, like, even the judge and the attorneys, most of the time, were not wearing their masks. And, yeah, you know, so, and, like, you know, and they really didn't say anything if we needed to take ours off or whatever. You know, they just really didn't care so long as we were all so distant, you know. So the only time they really wanted us to make sure to be wearing them was as we were, like, you know, entering or leaving the courtroom, like, as a group. But but once we were seated and distanced, then we could take them off if we wanted to. And so I was like, this is pretty awesome because that kind of goes against the Oregon mandates. But I think the judge was really cool and being really flexible and lax about it, you know. And so, you know, I'm like, okay, I'm voting for this judge in 2024. He was really cool about stuff. And so I think that's one of the reasons why I didn't make such a big stink about it, because I was like, okay, so long as I'm not having to sit there for hours wearing this thing, you know, and, like, The only time I had to have it fully on my face is when I went into the courthouse to go through security and get my slip of paper that says, yes, I've been through security. And then after that, it was just very brief moments that I had to wear it. In the jury room, none of the juries raised any issues with anybody that wanted to take their masks off. You know, and some of the jurors wore them most of the time. There were a few others like me that only wore them when we needed to. And gladly took them off, you know, the second we were in the room and, you know, sat down and spread out. So it worked out pretty well. Nobody freaked out about it, which was awesome. You know, I'm like, okay, there's hope for Oregon after all. You know, if you can get, you know, 12 random people in a room and all of them are like, want to wear the mask, whatever. You know, don't want to wear it, whatever. So I loved that part of it. So it turned out to be a lot more positive than I expected. And but very different. It was like, you know, and everybody was kind of set off because, you know, they're used to being in the courtroom in the courthouse. And, like, so whenever anybody needed to make copies of something, they had to go across the street over to the courthouse, make copies, come back, you know, going back and forth and stuff. And so it was just, you know, so they were all off kilter a little bit, but yet it was more comfortable because we had more space. We weren't just, you know, sardined into one small room, and it was definitely pretty interesting. Parking accommodations could have been better, though. The parking area that we were, you know, had free parking for, is like 3.5 blocks away. And so it's kind of like, okay.
And of course it had to start raining. You got, what, $15 a day to do your jury duty?
$10 a day for the first 2 days and then $15 for today. Yeah, real generous. And then 20 cents per mile for gas.
Okay.
So, yeah, hey, I'll take it, you know. I could have paid for all-day parking, you know, closer, but that's like $15 a day. I'm like, no, I'm not doing that. I'm not going to pay $5 more a day for that convenience, you know what I mean, than what I'm getting for it. So, you know, I'll pocket that money because Lord knows I need it. And I just did the walk, and today it was raining pretty good this morning. So it was like 55 degrees and raining, and
yeah,
just plug through it. You know, I'm glad that I'm not the type of person that, like, curls my hair and hairsprays it and all that kind of stuff. It's like, this is Oregon. It's a waste of time to do that. You'll just get rained on anyway once it's fall and winter and spring.
So I'm glad I can actually
talk about the case now, too. It's like, you know, yesterday when they rested their case, it was like maybe like 4:15 when the case was rested. So, you know, we only had about 45 minutes or so before, you know, we all were dismissed for the day. So we, you know, couldn't get much done in 45 minutes as far as deliberation. But, you know, like when we were first finally able to talk about the case with each other, then it was like we were all just like, you know, like unleashing all our thoughts on everything, you know, and all of us were like, oh, la, la, yeah, la, 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 la. And, you know, so we didn't really get a whole lot accomplished anyways, but we just needed to, like, vent and, like, get all of these, you know, thoughts that had been, you know, stirring in our heads for 2 days out, you know. So, yeah, it's pretty interesting, very interesting. And then, unlike a criminal trial, the civil trial required 9 jurors, so we had, you know, three main questions, and the requirement was the same 9 jurors have to agree on all 3 questions. So we didn't need all 12 to agree. It didn't need to be unanimous, but 9 out of those 12 had to agree on all 3 of those questions. You know, we couldn't have a different 9 people for the first question and then a mix of another 9 for the second.
Yeah.
9 people all had to agree. And so that kind of was a little bit of a challenge to do that, but it was better than, you know, like a criminal case where you it has to be anonymous, all or nothing, you know. So that was interesting, and it was a case involving a fender bender, but the plaintiff had a unknown previous shoulder injury that was asymptomatic, and her claim was that the defendant that rear-ended her triggered that shoulder to become problematic. And so, you know, and the plaintiff just really did not present enough of a case to convince us that this small fender bender, like, it was a case where the plaintiff was making a right-hand turn, and, you know, you have, you know, that designated right-hand turn in an intersection with a yield sign, so you can,
okay.
You know, even if the, you know, there's a stoplight that, if you're clear to go, you know, you're just in a yield situation, you could still turn right. And so apparently she was, you know, she had stopped at the yield sign because, you know, that direction had the stoplight, so the opposing traffic was green. And there, you know, there was a, the defendant said that she started to go but then stopped again, and then that's when she rear-ended her because she thought she was going to proceed making that right-hand turn. But then the plaintiff was saying, no, I only stopped one time, and she was rear-ended. And then, you know, and there's, it was just, it was really kind of weird. And then, so it was really, really minor, and it was like, and so they, and then she spent all this, you know, they got, like, this expert witness in that, like, has this software. He's, like, an accident recreation expert, and he made this, like, you know, video to portray what happened, and it just really wasn't very realistic as far as reality because, you know, it didn't take into account, like, what was the opposing traffic really because, of course, the defendant was saying there was no oncoming traffic coming, so she was free. So, you know, it was clear to go. But the plaintiff said that, no, there was incoming traffic coming, and that's why she didn't proceed. And, but then the plaintiff, like, changed her story. Like, she was a horrible witness. Her story changed multiple times, you know, even in her deposition in 2018. And then on the stand, when she was asked, you know, from either attorney, her story just changed every time, and or she couldn't remember. I don't remember, I don't remember, I don't remember. And
yeah.
Then... You know, yeah, and like, and then the defense attorney was like, "Do you remember saying this in your deposition?" "No, I don't remember." And you know, it's just like this is just not really believable. And so we had a hard time, like, and then I was like, "Well, you know, the fact of the matter is like, you know, the defense, you know, the defendant did not dispute fault for the accident. You know, she, you know, she knew, okay, I rear-ended you. I made an assumption and I made a mistake in that assumption, and that's why I rear-ended you." But then, like, it was so minor, you know, that it you know, they weren't going very fast. You know, it was like a little bump. And the plaintiff was driving a minivan and the defendant was driving a little Honda Civic. And so when she got bumped, I mean, all there was like a little bit of a scrape in the bumper, like not even a dent, just like a couple of minor scrapes of the bumper. And then one of the things that neither attorney brought up was whether or not airbags were deployed in either vehicle, right? And usually, you know, airbags are designed for front impact. So if there was enough force to give the plaintiff in the minivan to rock her, you know, and mess her, you know, and aggravate her shoulder so bad that, you know, she had to go all through these treatments and cortisone shots and all this stuff, if it was that bad, you know, then you would think that the defendant's car's airbag would have gone off due to the front impact, but it didn't. So that means it was very minor not to trigger that. And, you know, and plus, you know, the fact that, you know, hitting the minivan. So then they had this, the same expert with this fancy software that was created to reconstruct everything with all these algorithms and things to figure out the force. And his result was, you know, there was 500 pounds of force from the impact. And I'm like, well, you know, that 500 pounds of force maybe initially in the vehicle on the bumper, but we're talking about a minivan here, you know. We're not talking about, you know, a little shopping cart kind of car. We're, you know, so she had the whole back part, she had the back seat, you know, she's in the seat. So that 500 pounds of force would have definitely been much, you know, lessened by the time it gets to her and the front seat and, you know, the padding from her seat and stuff. So, and I have been in a similar kind of rear-end thing where somebody rear-ended me, and I, you know, several years ago, and I was driving my Dodge Stratus at the time, and it was a minivan that, a drunk driver minivan, I was sitting at a stoplight, that rear-ended me, and it was minor, but, you know, my bumper actually had a significant dent and scrape as a result of it, right? And even then, like, when he bumped me, it was like, I just felt like a little push forward, and that was it. I mean, it was not enough to, you know, cause me to have any kind of, like, whiplash or anything like that. You know, I wasn't moved so much forward. So, you know, I was kind of relating that way, and so I'm like, I just don't believe it. There was even nearly enough force to cause all of the shoulder pain and neck and everything else pain, you know, and like something else is going on here, you know. And so sure enough, we find out that the year prior, she had fallen down the stairs, and that's where they suspect that the original injury to her shoulder and neck and stuff happened, and then she never sought treatment for it. And so it wasn't until after this accident that she got checked out and x-rayed and MRI'd that they found that her shoulder was messed up, but the muscle around it was, like, atrophied and stuff. And so, you know, surgery wouldn't really repair it because it had already degraded so much that, you know, the tendons just, you know, really wouldn't be functioning because there wasn't enough muscle to attach them to, right? And so surgery really isn't an option because, you know, it's been too long since that original injury. And so it was just like, you know, and the plaintiff was asking $100,000 in non-economic damages and $35,000 in economic damages. And so we didn't give them nearly that. she just wasn't very convincing. And we had just a really hard time believing that this did it. And then on top of that, going through, like, her medical records and stuff, because she was seeing a chiropractor for a while. And so, like, the June and July following the accident, she was reporting that she felt, you know, she was feeling really good. And, you know, she didn't have any, you know, shoulder pain. And, you know, and she was able to, you know, do her normal duties. She was able to lift her arm up just fine and things like that. And so that was both June and July, and so it all seemed to be good. And then all of a sudden, in, you know, a couple months later in September, suddenly she's referred to the orthopedic office, you know, complaining again of all this pain and stuff. And so I'm like, okay, so what happened between June and July and, you know, and September, that, you know, where she was doing great and everything's good, and then all of a sudden everything comes back again. Then we find out that she and her family went to Disneyland on vacation. And I'm like, you know, and they didn't give us any details about that vacation, just that she went there for a few days on vacation. And I'm like, okay, so if she went to Disneyland, did, you know, my question was, did she ride any of the rides? Because, you know, if she rides a roller coaster or something, you get rocked around really good on roller coasters, you know what I mean? Side to side and everything, you get rocked around pretty good on a roller coaster. And I'm like, I am betting you that that's what really triggered the aggravation in her shoulder and stuff, is probably that, or something happened during that vacation that actually triggered it, not the accident itself. And so so we were all, you know, agreeing. So we ended up deciding, okay, well, we will award her the lost income from taking time off of work after the accident, and the initial hospital visit later that night after the accident, up until, and the chiropractic appointments up until that July, you know, date, the last appointment in July where she said everything was fine. And I'm like, okay, but anything after that, no. You know, we'll give her this much. And so she really didn't end up with a lot. She ended up with about a total of like $8,500 is what we awarded her out of what they were asking for. So I'm sure the defendant was pretty happy about that, because, you know, $8,500 is a lot better for the defendant than granting $135. So it's pretty interesting.
All right, so
that's my story.
So that's over.
That's my story. Yeah, but now I don't have to go back in for a couple of years. Well, I won't get called back in for at least 2 years, so I'm off the hook for a while.
So.
Now, by law, if I'm called back, even if I am called back, then I can automatically be, you know, I can automatically be excused because I've already served within 2 years. Yep.
So what news, when you got back home, what news did you get to read through and see what's what interests you for today?
Oh, boy. Gosh, I need to think. I've been, like, so... I read this, more local news from Oregon. Oregon senators call for an investigation into alleged COVID-19 statistical manipulation. So there's
so they
for Oregon
Kate Brown
after
of,
all.
Are they accusing Kate Brown of hiding some things?
I'll read you like the first paragraph or so. So Oregon State Senators Kim Thatcher and Dennis Linthicum, both Republicans, have petitioned acting U.S. Attorney Scott E. Asfug to launch a grand jury investigation into the measurement of COVID-19 statistics by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, and the FDA. Thatcher and Linthicum submitted the petition in a letter on August 16th after gathering signatures from 1,718 Oregonians and 53,032 Americans. In the petition, the senators expressed concerns over the measurement and reporting of COVID-19 vaccine adverse reactions, including fatalities and injuries. The lawmakers stated that a whistleblower under sworn testimony said the data reported under the CDC's Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System, VAERS, may have been underreported by a factor of 5. Regarding the diagnosis of COVID-19 through widely used PCR tests, the senators said that the CDC and the FDA's setting of one particular test parameter, the cycle threshold, generated false positives, resulting in inflated numbers of COVID cases, hospitalizations, and deaths. So, I saw that, and that perked my interest. I was like, awesome, you know, because we've known this all along, that the numbers have been so fabricated over all this time, you know, false positive, underreporting of adverse reactions, the changing of the, you know, the changing in the way that they counted it. Like, I remember a while back, I would have to go hunting right now to try to find it, but I remember a while back, Oregon was counting every positive COVID test as a separate case. So the
right.
same person could get three COVID tests and all of them still positive, and when that would count as three separate cases, even though it's the same person. And so that was inflating the numbers, and they changed that. I can't remember when that was. Maybe I'm thinking off the top of my head, and my gut was saying somewhere around May, I think. Maybe April or May of this year, I think. And so they had to change their whole way of doing it, and I think other states followed suit. So, yeah, so so that's pretty interesting. So there is some hope for Oregon. There are some sane Oregon legislators here, guys. And so that's pretty cool that this is kind of starting to come out of under the microscope. And I really – and, of course, the mass media has not been reporting on this. You know, I don't see anything from CNN reporting on this or highlighting it in any way. If you do find it, it's probably buried somewhere. But this – just, you know, I saw this article posted just 2 days ago. And so I hope other states follow suit. I hope that more and more pressure starts to happen, because what we've known with this complete deception with these numbers to justify all the lockdowns and mandates and BS that we've all been subjected to for the last year and a half, needs to come to light, and it's finally starting to look like we're going to start, you know, that there's enough people out there to get at the truth and start picking apart these numbers. So that's something I'm excited about.
Well, I see that one of your good callers wants to come say hi to you. Do you want to let them in?
Absolutely. I'll bring Joe in. I recognize him. Joe.
Hello, guys. Hello, Lori. Listen, I've got a topic for you guys.
Okay.
Also, before I go into that, since you were on the selected for the jury, what happened with the mask? Did they allow you to wear the mask, take it off, what?
Yeah, I think maybe you disconnected or something while I was talking about that. I don't know, but yeah, it was actually really cool. Everybody, like the judge, was really cool about the, like the only time they really wanted us to wear it was as I was explaining that they actually did this case off site, and so we had to go into the courthouse wearing our masks to go through security, and then we got like a slip of paper, and then we went across the street to the venue that they rented the space at for us to do this trial. And
right.
then because it was off site, it was like the judge was really cool. The judge and the attorneys, like they had their masks off more than they had them on. Nobody gave a crap. You know, like the only time they wanted us to have our masks on is when we were all gathered in one spot. Like we're all going, you know, all the jurors are going in through the door together into the jury room because, you know, they needed the attorneys needed to discuss something or review something. But once we were in the room and once we're in the room together, no problem. We could take it off. And nobody of the jury, like, no jurors made any issue of those of us that just took it off immediately and barely wore them, you know. There was a few jurors that, you know, they wore their masks pretty religiously, but they didn't say anything up to those of us that took them off. And, you know, the judge was cool about it. You know, they were like, yeah, wear it all the time if you want. If you need to take it off, take it off. They didn't give a shit. You know, like, they really didn't.
Right.
And yeah. So, yeah, most of the time I did not have mine on. You know, it's like when I could take it off, I did. And they didn't make a big issue out of it. And so that was the cool part of it. And I think one of the reasons why is because it was off-site versus in the courthouse. And so they could be a little more lax about it. So that's what was cool about it. So, yeah, I'm glad for that because I would have had issue. If I had to wear that stupid thing on my face for hours at a time, I would have, I would have made a scene about it probably. And but the fact that while I was sitting there, like, you know, we were distant, you know, the jury was, we were all distant seating in the courtroom. So once we were seated,
right.
It wasn't a big deal if we took it off. Yeah, and then I was glad because I was seated right up front where there were tables versus just chairs. And so, you know, I could just kind of lean forward, and I was comfortable with writing my notes. Like, I'm an insane note taker. And so it worked out pretty well for me. And then I could clearly see everybody and hear everybody. And yeah, and so it was great because, like, when the witnesses were talking, the judge would order them to take their mask off when they were talking. The judge ordered the attorneys to take their mask off when they were talking to make sure that they could be heard and not sound muffled.
So the stenographer, the stenographer could take down accurate notes.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, it's all recorded, so they had a bunch of, you know, little microphones placed around.
Okay.
You know, so that, and then it's all recorded, the audio is all recorded. And so, yeah, so they actually didn't want people wearing masks when they were speaking, which I was like, right on. And we could see the facial expressions. Like, that was my concern, too, was, you know, if their face is covered in a mask, they can't really see their facial expressions very well. And they sound muffled. Uh-huh. So yeah, the judge actually ordering people, hey, when you're talking, take your mask off, please. I loved it. I'm so voting for this judge. I'm so voting for him in 2024. Okay, you're cool.
Because when I called in, I heard your voice, and I'm wondering to myself, is she calling from the outside or is she calling from jail? So now I know.
Yeah, right.
You're calling from... You're calling from home.
As much as
right,
I love
good.
This show, I would not waste my one phone call.
Right.
No offense, proof.
Yep. I have to call a good lawyer. Just forget about the show for a while. But here's the topic.
So no
but here's the topic for you guys. Yeah.
Okay.
I was on another show. Before I got here, and I have a real live Australian from Australia talking about the conditions there in Australia.
Ah.
It is horrendous, okay? They don't have a Bill of Rights. The Constitution does, they have one particular law in some vague, obscure law that allows the vaccine to not be taken. If somebody can take it, you know, can find the law, can interpret it properly, and apply it. But this woman was personally on a bridge where there were protesters, and I'm glad for the Australians for finally standing up because they were getting beat every time that they said, no, we don't want this anymore. They were getting beat. But on a particular bridge, there were a number of protesters, but there were 100, and what she described as there were not normal police. They were, I don't know if they were the military or if there was paramilitary, but there were 100 of them firing real bullets. Not, not the rubber bullets. Okay? So, I told them, look, from what you were telling me as I was talking to her on the phone, if you don't have a Bill of Rights, you don't have right. Well, not only that, yeah, you don't have standing. You don't have the law to back you up. Therefore, they're thinking about going to court. I say, well, if you don't have the law to back you up, you go to court, you're going to lose. Especially since you've already said that, you know, a number of judges are already corrupt. So the only solution that I see for Australia and probably for the rest of the world, and they don't have guns in Australia either. in order to get a gun, you have to let the government know what your reason is, what particular occupation you're in,
They just banned knives too, like anything other than kitchen knives. They just banned as well. So they've taken two very popular sources of defense away from their people.
They're down to cricket bats.
Yeah, I hope somebody hits the equivalent of a home run because they're going to need it. Because right now, since they don't have guns, they're taking away the knives. The only other way, and the law is corrupt. There is no law. There's no constitution, no Bill of Rights for them. The only thing that they can do is to – they can't even say rise up, because I said the only thing you can do is to rise up. She says that if anybody in Australia even says rise up, the cops will come and look for you. You're considered breaking the law. Just like over here, if you're somebody who believes that Biden lost the election or that there might be some kind of corruption going on in the federal government, you might be considered, you certainly will be targeted as a dissident or domestic terrorist. So the only solution I say is you gotta get the guns somehow. And you have to oppose the government, because otherwise Australia is a doomed country, just plain doomed. And so are we, because we, even though we have a constitution, we don't have rights. We actually do not have rights unless the government is enforcing the protection of those rights. You don't have rights. We only have privileges. Have you guys ever listened to George Carlin and his comedy skit about government and the bullshit? How they own us?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's exactly,
instead of the other way
exactly
around.
Exactly right.
And I kind of feel like the Biden administration is looking at Australia for ideas, on how to operate. And Australia should be looking for a means to implement a similar type of Bill of Rights, a similar type of constitution that protects them, because I think they're facing really even more tyranny than we are here. And if they allow that to continue, then that's kind of encouraging the tyrannical Americans that support all these mandates and basically being Nazis about all this COVID stuff. It enables them, and it enables the Biden administration to continue further and further mandates and prosecuting people harshly that dissent. And that's what we can't have. That's a right that we hold dear. It's the First Amendment for a reason. We have the right to protest. We have the right to dissent from our government. We have the right not to comply. And so that's what Australians' problem is that's what they're facing. And like you said, firing real bullets on protesters, that's pretty bad. That's really pretty bad, especially unarmed. It'd be one thing if it was a whole group of protesters that are all armed with AR-15s that are actually shooting at the police. That'd be one thing, then the police would have no choice but to defend themselves with deadly force in that situation. But that's not the case there in Australia, the police aren't faced with a bunch of guns in their faces. So I don't know how they can justify that.
Because they don't have any laws that make the police liable. Since they don't have those particular laws, then they don't have rights. I told you, Australia's a canary in the coal mine. Whatever happens in Australia will happen throughout the rest of the world. They are the model for tyranny. They are the most tyrannical 1984 type of expression of what's going on with what I could consider the cabal. The Illuminati, the Rothschilds, however you want to term it. But again, even though we have the Constitution, we have to rise up eventually ourselves. We're not going to get
justification or redemption from the courts. The courts of justice corrupt. There will be a few cases that will slip through and make it seem and give us hope that, you know, things might change. But I doubt it. I am not very optimistic.
Yeah, I mean, I just hope that, you know, I mean, that, you know, America is one of the countries that a lot of other countries look toward. It's like whatever we're doing, that's kind of the gauge. You know, they gauge themselves upon what we do in a lot of cases. And so I think the more we push against all this stuff, the more the citizens of these other countries will see that and gain their own confidence. But yet, I don't think we're doing enough protesting, because there's other countries that have been, like, way, you know, a huge protest against this stuff. You know, especially Spain. Spain knows how to protest. that kind of thing. And so, I think the tide is going to start changing. And, that story I read about Oregon was one of those signs where they're finally starting to push through and insist on being allowed to question all of this and do so formally and legally, you know, by legislators and stuff. And so I think that this is a good sign. If there's two Oregon senators doing this, as leftist as the state is, that's a pretty good sign for the rest of the country if they follow suit.
Well, if they're doing it, they get results. I'll tell you who the good examples are. Norway, Sweden, and Denmark. All three of those countries have said no more mask mandates, no more vaccine mandates. Anybody can wear a mask or not wear a mask, and anybody can get a vaccine or not get a vaccine. So those are the beacons on the hill. Right now, you're right, people do look to America in order to be the overall beacon on the hill, but we're not doing a good job.
No, not at all. We've allowed too much of this. It's the propaganda, too. I mean, the programming and all this propaganda during all this has just been so in your face all the time, you know, and it's just propaganda, more propaganda, more propaganda, repeat, 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 repeat. And the more they do that, they know, psychology-wise, the more easily it is to manipulate people as a result, the more that starts getting in their head. And it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of very similar concept with marketing. Millions and millions and millions of dollars are spent on marketing. And I'm not talking about flyers. I'm talking about the psychology behind the marketing. And so, you know, that's why, like, with a good marketing, when you get that good jingle, you know, you hear, you know, there's a product and you hear that commercial, and then you just, and then the commercial song gets stuck in your head all day. You know what I mean? That kind of thing. And you can't get it out of your head. It's almost like that's what they've done with all this COVID stuff. You know, it's like this, it's in effect, kind of like a jingle that's just stuck in people's heads. And so they believe it. But, you know, just because Coca-Cola has a really good slogan and a really good jingle that gets stuck in your head doesn't mean Coca-Cola is good for you, right? And so it's kind of the same concept with this COVID crap. Is just because they keep repeating it like a stupid jingle that's in your head all day long, doesn't mean that it's good or true. Where did this protest happen in Australia? Do you know, like, what city it was or when?
Just slipped my mind. Victoria. The state or province of Victoria.
Cool.
But when you
I kind of want to take a look at that and research what happened there. You got me curious.
Okay.
So I jotted it down for further research.
When you're referring to avatars, that's exactly what it is, because the propaganda is based upon the works of a guy named Bernays. He was a nephew of Sigmund Freud, and the government has used his psychology in order to institute the propaganda against us. So the brainwashing and the propagandizing is a result of the kind of principles that he had, which the private sector used in their advertisements. And to put it even more pointedly, we are in the Matrix. People, to me, that was one of the most important films I've ever seen. It just absolutely shows what can happen when when you go to sleep, literally, as in the Matrix, and you get hooked up to machines that will sap your energy from you. The propaganda that we get through CNN, mainstream media, newspapers, etc., that is the propaganda machine. That is the brainwashing. We don't have to be, like in Korea, we don't have to be tied down and have droplets of water fall onto our forehead like Chinese water torture in order to be, propagandized,
yeah,
in order to be brainwashed. It's amazing what you can do when you have the technology.
Yeah. I mean, there's a reason why millions of dollars are spent on this kind of thing. And they've got this propaganda and psyops down to a, they call it down to a science, but they've, virtually perfected it. But they can't get through to everybody. There's enough strong minds out there, such as yourself, such as Proof, such as every host on Freedomizer, such as, there's some people that all the psyops is just not working. They can't hypnotize all of us. And I, as a matter of fact, I did try to get hypnotized at one point, and I just couldn't get hypnotized. I just couldn't go under. I just couldn't, They tried, Hypnotists tried, but I couldn't, I wasn't being put under. My brain just would not allow it to happen.
Yeah, so there are plenty like us, like you, hopefully, who will not succumb to any further indoctrination. I know if I were president, what I would do, I wouldn't mandate it, but I would certainly suggest it strongly, that from the ages, from the grades of 1 to 12, that it become an official program of the school system, that every student must take on a daily basis formal courses in logic and critical thinking. If you do that, then the politicians cannot bullshit you, because you will be questioning everything that they do. Don't say.
Well, can't have that. Do you really think that the Department of Education is going to allow young children to actually have classes on critical thinking?
The opposite of their goal.
You know
what they might recommend if to go along with it? If it came with a book about anal sex, because that's what they're pushing now.
I laugh, but you're right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Proof.
Where are you, Proof? I'm here.
Okay, good. We should probably allow you to say something once in a while on your own show, right?
People hear me all week. I'm sure you had fun last Thursday while I was meeting Joey Gilbert and such.
Yeah, how did that go? I mean, I haven't listened to the shows from this week, obviously, because I was just brain dead, brain dead by the time I got home. And so I really haven't, I've picked up on a few articles and things, but I haven't listened to any of the shows like I usually do. So
no,
how did last Thursday go for you?
How Governor Grusom is going to ban all the weed whackers and such.
Oh, yeah, I read about
that. Yes, banning gas-powered leaf blowers and weed whackers and lawn equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that includes lawnmowers, too.
Yes.
So, which completely baffles me, because, if you're a landscaper for a profession, for me, You know, my yard, you know, isn't very huge. So, you know, I have a cordless battery-powered weed whacker and leaf blower. And, you know, I'm waiting for, you know, number one, the finances, and number two, I want to find a good, you know, a good battery-powered lawnmower as well that's dual blade and also self-propel. And when I looked, you know, a while back, like a year or so ago, I couldn't find any that was both self-propelled and dual blade. Because dual blade, you know, the grass in my backyard is like crabgrass, not like regular grass. So it's really thick. So a single blade, I just don't think is going to be able to do the job. I need to have that double blade. And I couldn't find one with both. I could find a model that was double blade, but not self-propel. And, you know, or it's self-propel, but it's single blade, you know. And so I'm waiting to see if they start making a decent one that has both. And then I'd gladly do it, especially being more lightweight and stuff, too. So I'm not, you know, lugging this, you know, my mower right now, it's, you know, an older Honda gas one, but that sucker's like 55 pounds at least, and so it's pretty heavy to maneuver around. So if I could get one that's, you know, 30 pounds instead, that's, you know, with that battery powered, that'd be awesome. But that's a small yard. When you've got professionals out there that are doing large plots of land, you know, like at parks and things like that, how many batteries are they expected to have fully charged and on hand to get the job done for all of their equipment? I think that's unreasonable. I mean, they're going to have to hire staff that does nothing but charge the damn batteries so that their crew can be operational and get the job done.
I'm waiting for proof. Okay, he's probably getting a sandwich. Well, in any case.
Oh, no, and then don't remember on Sunday with how your audio is? It's doing the same thing again.
Is it? I'm going to call back. Well, actually, I'm going to go. So I'm glad that you're not incarcerated. I'm glad you're free and to be the host of the show again.
Are you going to call in on Sunday night on my show?
Probably. Yeah.
Okay, good. I hope that you do. I might be doing it solo again, so.
Okay. I might even call back later on tonight because you guys are out for 3 hours. So so I'll see you guys until next time anyway. All right. Good night.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Joe, for calling in. Always good to hear from you.
Yeah. Glad to be here. Take care.
You too.
All right, so that leaves us.
Hello again. So how have you been all week? Like, how has this week gone for you?
I don't know. It's normal. It just feels like Groundhog Day every single day, but other than that, it's fine.
Didn't you have a guest on Tuesday, I think? Or was that yesterday?
Yeah, Joanne. But she's a long-time host that's on hiatus right now. But I love Joanne. She's one of my favorite people ever. But when you have another freedomist on your show that's part of our host, it's like... it's like saying Dahl's going to be on my show. It's like, it's great. I love her, but it's not like you're having a big name guest or anything. Come on. So
yeah,
I've been
like having
slow.
A family member over for dinner.
Yeah. I've been a little slow this week with putting guests on the table. I wrote to a bunch of people, but I got to do my follow-ups because a couple people, two of them wrote back and says, it depends what day you need me. And then I threw some dates out there, and It's been 2 or 3 days, and I haven't heard anything. So I got to do my follow-ups.
Yeah, definitely do that. I don't know. It's like we're kind of – this week seems like we're in a lull. Like, I know I was, like, in a time warp. You know, these past 3 days have seemed like – like, was it really only 3 days? It feels like it was longer. I just feel like I've been time warped and brain dead. So I hear you. But it sounds like I'm not the only one for the same, kind of the same feelings this week. Sounds like you're kind of in the same boat.
Well, Bill Clinton went to the hospital just a little bit ago. As of an hour ago, he was hospitalized with an infection with sepsis. Non-COVID related.
I thought everything was COVID related. Oh, except if you're a big name politician, then they'll say no. If you're a Republican, then of course it's COVID. There's got to be COVID involved.
Yes, he was put in UC Irvine in California.
Huh.
So we'll see what happens.
He doesn't live there. What's he doing in California and going to the hospital there instead of?
I'm sure he was at some engagement. Who knows?
I'm looking that up right now. First I've heard of it. Okay.
But I do want to share what Eric July was talking about today. Talking about when you comply with authoritarians, or as critic says, with progressive C's. Since I know he's listening, I figured I'd throw a shout out there. So I want to give Eric July's reasoning behind why you don't comply with authoritarians. Because, well, for one, you have the prime minister out there saying that this is going to be forever. So the more you comply, the more they give you, and the more they know you'll put up with it. So I want to hear what Eric has to say.
On the subject of noncompliance and what happens when you allow, thankfully we have these other governments to refer to, but what happens when you allow authoritarian little shits is more leeway, less pushback, because you just want to get this over with and you want to get on the other side because they promise you that. Hey, just listen to us and we'll stop abusing you. That's what they say. So we're going to listen to Carrie Chant of New South Wales. She is the doctor and chief health officer out there in Australia. Let's listen to what she has to say real quick.
And respond. Your level of restrictions, what you permit, it may be that we actually have indoor mask wearing for years. And this virus may throw us curveballs. There may be, you know, we've got the Delta variant. God help us if we have another variant and respond.
So what you just heard this woman say that y'all wearing masks for basically years indoors. And then, of course, leaving the door open for variants, right? Variants. And that, you know, basically saying that, yeah, you might not ever get your fucking, you know, your liberty back. But it's for your own safety. Look, guys, well, we've seen this out of Australia and New Zealand. That's what happens when you not only just trust your government, but that's what happens when you don't push back. We do see people in pockets of those areas having their protests and doing what they can. But they take your silence for compliance. They take your lack of pushback for exactly that as well. So when people like myself advocate for noncompliance, it isn't because we just want to see some conflict. It isn't because we don't recognize the issues that may come from that, from people losing things. You know, be it, you know, their certain portions of their livelihood will be sacrificed in the event that they actually stood up to tyranny. But you need to understand that the way that you've been going about it, when it started with 2 weeks of slow to spread and then it accelerated, the reason why it did that was because you showed them and you showed these people that if they promise you security, then you will do whatever it is that they say do, no matter how stupid it is. They could be wrong on a certain subject. New South Wales, as well as Australia in terms of their case numbers, the lockdowns have not permitted shit. You know, it hasn't. There's no correlation, direct correlation between that, as we've seen places that have high vaccination rates, places that have had lockdowns, and their cases still go up. Okay? So they can show you with their own evidence that it's not working, but we're going to continue to do it. Again, you know why? Because you told them or you taught them, you showed them that you'll do whatever it is that they say, so as long as they promise you some sort of security. And that's why it doesn't stop. So this may be coming. I don't know why. Oh, my allergies. Allergies going off. But this may be coming to a country, city, state near you. But this is why noncompliance is so important. Because at some point, you have to tell them to fuck off and go fuck themselves. Oh, well, it's easy for you to say you're self-employed. You have, well, no, don't look at it like that. Look at it like, okay, I put myself in this situation for exactly this reason. You don't think I take a hit? I'd encourage you to look at the fact that there's been, what, now 4 years between my band's first album and my band's second album. You could blame the fucking pandemic on that, or rather the government's response to that. And considering that you have reopenings, but these venues and shit are trying to have these requirements, yeah, that kind of puts a dent in a lot of things that we want to do in terms of touring. I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that. Okay with that. It's worth it, you know what I mean? I'm losing out in some instances, but I have revenue streams coming from other areas. That's why I did it. Don't look at it like, whoa, it's easy for you to say. No, I worked to get to this point so I could live to fight another day in the event that one of those revenue streams are gone. Hell, same could be said for fucking YouTube if it shut down. It's important. Diversify. Nonetheless, you have to recognize, as uncomfortable as it may make a lot of you guys, you have to recognize that this does not stop until you demand that it does. That's when it stops. Oh, man, we've been doing this for so long. When does it stop? That's when you're ready. Simple. When you're ready. You just watched a clip from my podcast, For Cannon's Sake. Catch us live at...
All right, so anyway, he's exactly right on that, and I've said that a lot. There's a lot of stuff that people are willing to put up with, and until there's something that people are not willing to put up with, then they stop, and then they regroup, and then they try again another time. So the Sheet Metal Air, Rail, and Transportation Union, they have the acronym SMART. 203,000 members announce a stand against the forced gene therapy. So you got a big union that is saying no.
I am, you know, cheering for them. There's a lot of them. You know, there's several unions that are starting to say no to this stuff and give pushback. And I'm cheering for all of it.
So I don't know if the Rail and Transportation Union includes the airplanes. Obviously, airplanes
are still transportation.
But I think they have their own union. But I don't know.
I would imagine. I mean, transportation, planes are a form of transportation.
Yeah,
but then
if
that
they
might
have
be
their
under the
unions,
FAA.
They wouldn't be involved in two unions.
That's true, yeah.
See, I don't know the answer, though. So that's more of a question and not rhetoric.
Yeah, I'm not sure on that. I guess maybe we'll find out more as that story develops.
So when you get a chance, and I did not watch this. I only saw little clips that were on the Gateway Pundit. But Sanjay Gupta from Fake News went on Joe Rogan's podcast yesterday. So I wouldn't say they debated, but they chopped it up a little bit. There were some things that Sanjay admitted he didn't know. Either he lives in his own bubble or he was lying. And people believe that he lives in his bubble as opposed to him just blatantly lying.
I'm leaning more toward blatantly lying, but hey, that's just me.
Well, if you live
in a
bubble... Did you upload
any of those clips, or...?
No, I did not.
Oh, okay.
That's why I said I only saw a few snippets from that, but... just because they're on fake news and just because we don't trust them doesn't mean that they were lying on the show necessarily. They could be, but if you live in a bubble and you are part of the 1% and you only talk to the 1%, then you might not know a lot of information because a lot of what you read is spoon-fed to you. So either way, it's fake news. Don't get me wrong. It's just that is he being spoon-fed the news by the 1% or... was he lying? And we won't know the answer.
Yeah, I guess that's one of those things where we have to make up our own minds on that. And...
well, if you're the 1%, you think of the 99% as a bunch of scumbags. So you're not going to follow their news. You're not going to follow what they follow. You don't go where the 99% goes. So... it's just that you have your own world that you live in.
Yep. Yep.
Which is unfortunate that they believe that they're better than everybody else, but that's their life, I guess.
But they're doing it for our own good. Thank you, Mama, Papa, for knowing best what the rest of the 99% of the population should do.
So Germany, a court in Germany finds that YouTube's removal of videos about COVID was illegal and orders YouTube to restore the videos where people spill the truth about COVID.
Wow. I better look that up.
But that's
that.
Only in Germany.
Yeah, like we said, it's like, okay, now if Germany's doing it, then that might trigger other countries, including our own, to follow suit.
I did share it right now on my spybook wall again.
Cool, I'll go there. Save me a little hunting. Nice. I'm going to share that over to my Lucid Libertarian page right now. Right on. So here's a story that came out October 5th. I'm not sure if you saw it. Might be old news to you, but it was new news to me when I came upon it. Federal lawsuit, 50,000 people dead within 14 days of COVID shot. Attorney submits Medicare and Medicaid tracking systems data. Approximately 50,000 people died in America within 14 days of receiving the COVID-19 experimental vaccine, indicates hard data revealed in the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services Medicare tracking system, according to Orange County, California-based attorney Thomas Renz. During his speech at Clay Clark's Reawaken American tour held in Colorado between September 24th and 25th, attorney Renz presented more data obtained from anonymous whistleblowers for a federal lawsuit he filed as co-counsel on July 19th. The lawsuit on behalf of plaintiffs, America's Frontline Doctors, against the Department of Health and Human Services contains allegations made in sworn affidavit from a worker with access to government websites and data collection on vaccine injuries and deaths. Hard data from that system reveals that 19,400 people less than 80 years old have died within 14 days of receiving the COVID-19 vaccination, according to the never-before-seen data, stated Attorney Renz. And so it goes on from there. So, I mean, this stuff is starting to come to light. You know, they're, you know, it sounds like, you know, more and more they're looking at other tracking systems and data than what the FDA is providing or, you know, CDC is providing. I mean, and looking at other avenues for more accurate data. And that's a pretty concerning number, you know. 50,000 people dying within 2 weeks of getting a COVID shot, that's pretty big. And, of course, they're going to try to minimize that. Well, there's been millions of people, you know. And it's like, you know, it doesn't matter. 50,000 is a huge number. That means there's something seriously wrong.
Even if they're not looking for mass death, all we're doing, because I don't know if you saw this, but a story came out in one of those newspapers. I forgot to grab it for today. I had it up yesterday. But they're saying the people that got three Russian roulettes already, they said that you have to find a way now to get COVID because that's the best immunity that you can have. After getting three Russian roulettes, they're telling you that you would be better off getting COVID before your next gene therapy session.
Yeah, I believe it. I mean, I think that,
so,
you know.
They're telling you there's no benefit to getting it, except you got to help Pfizer make money.
Mm-hmm.
So
exactly.
There's
Pfizer,
another.
Pfizer, Moderna.
By the way, there's another name that Joe has now besides Brandon. It's now Empty Shelf Joe.
Yep,
and,
I saw that too, yep.
So Tucker Carlson says that he's now called Empty Shelf Joe. I want to play what Tucker said about that today with all those empty shelves out there.
In January of 2000, Bill Clinton gave his final State of the Union address to the Congress. Clinton used that speech to push for dropping trade barriers against the government of China. Here's the argument he made. Allowing China into the World Trade Organization, Clinton promised America that night, would, quote, open China's markets to the United States and, quote, plainly advance the cause of peace in Asia and promote the cause of change in China. In his last year in office, Clinton made expanding the Chinese economy one of his most urgent priorities. To do that, he appointed a lobbyist called Steve Ricchetti and put him in charge of the project. Fast forward to today. China has been a member of the World Trade Organization for 20 years. Steve Ricchetti has risen even higher in Democratic politics. He's now a top White House aide to Joe Biden. As for China, it has indeed changed, as Bill Clinton promised that it would. China is now the richest country in the world. Its police state is far more efficiently authoritarian even than it was under Chairman Mao. China is a much graver threat to the United States and to its neighbors. We're as far from peace in Asia as we have been since 1945. The American manufacturing sector, meanwhile, is effectively gone. It evaporated along with millions of middle-class jobs. Most of the objects you buy now are made in China. Maybe you've seen the pictures of queues of cargo ships strung out into the Pacific trying to get into American ports to unload their containers. You will hear this scene described as part of something called the global supply chain, but that intentionally understates what it actually is. What you're looking at are America's supply lines. At this point, we're effectively an outpost, totally dependent on a faraway headquarters for the things we need to live. Here's what it looks like.
Why so many empty shelves?
U.S. ports are backed up.
Take a look at this. Cargo ships sitting in the sea waiting to pull into port. It's causing major U.S. retailers like Walmart, Home Depot, and Costco to charter private cargo ships in a rush to fill shelves for the holiday season. On the roads, there's a shortage of truck drivers.
The White House says it's addressing the issues fueled by COVID-19, a labor shortage, and increased demand.
Suddenly, for the first time in generations, Americans are having trouble buying basic necessities, the things they need. A new poll by Rasmussen found that 62% of Americans said they have shortages in stores where they live. The things they can buy are suddenly much more expensive.
The Labor Department reporting Wednesday, meats, poultry, fish, and eggs increased a combined 10.5% since September 2020. But it's not just food prices skyrocketing. The Consumer Price Index shows overall prices are up 5.4% from a year ago. More pain at the pumps. The national gas price rose $1 since last year. AAA showing the average price per gallon up from $2.18 in 2020 to $3.29 this year. The Social Security Administration says inflation is why nearly 70 million Americans receiving Social Security benefits will see a nearly 6% increase in payments next year, the highest increase in four decades.
There are no signs that fundamentally any of this is going to improve anytime soon. In fact, on Wednesday, the administration acknowledged that your heating bills are likely to jump by more than 50% this winter. Those are the kind of things that people actually notice. It hurts when you get poorer, and many people are getting poorer. But strangely, the administration has refused to acknowledge this. If anything, they're celebrating it. Last night, a Harvard professor called Jason Furman, who's closely aligned with the Biden White House, sent this tweet, quote, "Most of the economic problems we're facing, inflation, supply chains, etc., are high-class problems. We wouldn't have had them if the unemployment rate was still 10%, end quote. In other words, you ought to be thrilled to have less money. It means we're winning. Ron Klain, who was Joe Biden's chief of staff at the White House, promptly endorsed that tweet. And that's delusional. Or maybe it's intentional. You pretend your failures are victories and some people will doubtless believe you. That seems to work in Afghanistan. Maybe it'll work here. That could be their thinking. But it won't work here because domestic economics is not like foreign policy. People notice when their own lives change. When you can't buy Christmas presents for your children or manage to keep your house warm in January, these are not symbolic problems. These are measurable declines in your family's standard of living, and they have consequences. If economic decline continues, and it seems likely to continue, you will see a profound political reset in this country. And here's why. The only reason Americans have put up with the endless woke garbage that the left churns out by the gallon is because they can afford to put up with it. For generations, this has been a very rich country, and affluence covers a multitude of sins. People will tolerate a lot of things they disagree with as long as gas is cheap and the Amazon deliveries keep coming. But when a society becomes poorer, people's attitudes change, and they change fast. For one thing, they become much less patient when they're mistreated. You're firing me right before Christmas because I won't take your shot? No, I'm resisting that. You're telling me my son can't get a job because he's the wrong skin color? No, that's wrong, and I'm going to fight it, et cetera, et cetera. Politics will look very different in a country with permanent shortages, and this may be an unpleasant surprise for the Democratic Party. The progressive left's entire program is built on the presumption of endless, boundless affluence. Of course we can afford that. We're rich. People like Nancy Pelosi and Sandy Cortez and Rashida Tlaib believe that, and they believe it as a matter of faith. They talk about economics, but they have no idea how the actual economy works. They don't know anything about the great American affluence machine. They've never really had jobs. The one thing they know for certain, dead certain, is that every good thing must be free. It has to be. But that's not how life works, certainly not in countries that don't hold the world's reserve currency. There's a reason they don't have drag queen story hour in Mexico. People in Michoacan are worried about tortilla prices and cartel shootings. They don't have time for that kind of nonsense. We're about to become a lot more like Mexico. It turns out our economy was much more fragile than we thought it was. And if we'd known that earlier, we might not have elected an economic illiterate like Joe Biden as president. Here's Joe Biden during the campaign explaining to CNN anchors that actually printing trillions of new dollars for wasteful government social programs will reduce inflation.
But if you're pumping all of this money
into the economy, couldn't that add to...
No, look, here's the deal. Moody's today, we're now a Wall Street firm, not some liberal think tank, said if we pass the other two things I'm trying to get done, we will, in fact, reduce inflation. Reduce inflation. Reduce inflation. Because we're going to be providing good opportunities and jobs for people who, in fact, are going to be reinvesting that money back in all the things we're talking about.
Did I say the campaign? He was actually president when he said that. That was this June. When he stood on stage, looked right into the camera, and told us that when you make more money, when you print more U.S. dollars, the value of U.S. dollars goes up. And then you watch the CNN anchors nod like livestock. It made sense to them. But, of course, it's ludicrous. As just about every sane person has acknowledged since, inflation is rising because the government has devalued the U.S. dollar by making too many U.S. dollars. They're like sand now. They're not worth much. But still, the White House does not seem concerned. Pete Buttigieg has been on leave from his job since August after adopting a child, paternity leave, they call it, trying to figure out how to breastfeed. No word on how that went. But now he's back in office as the transportation secretary, and he's deeply amused, he says, to see that dozens of container ships can't get into this country.
As we're looking at these supply chain issues, how bad are they going to get for Americans? And I'm talking specifically, you know, leading here into the December holidays where people are relying on getting goods, on getting presents.
Well, I think there's always been two kinds of Christmas shoppers. There's the ones who have all their list completed by Halloween, and then there's people like me who show up at the mall on Christmas Eve. If you're in that latter bucket, obviously there's going to be more challenges.
Kind of a funny little dorky dad story. I wait till the last minute to shop for Christmas. That's not the point, Pete Buttigieg. The point is you're the transportation secretary, and our transportation grid is broken, and people can't get Christmas presents for their kids. Or food that they want to eat, or things that they would like to buy. Our shelves are empty. Is that a problem? No, it's sort of amusing. The deeper truth is that people can't get consumer goods because we're too dependent on China, because our leaders outsourced all of our production to a foreign country. And now they're joking about it, and they want you to believe that's a good thing. And because they want you so badly to believe it's a good thing, their allies in the media are repeating that message verbatim.
So I talked to Kai Rizdahl last night, who explained to me about the supply chain. Yes, it is terrible. People want to get their things. But it's also an indicator that the economy is doing well. People want to buy things and that it's backed up. So let's look at the part that, hey, the economy is great. People can buy things again. They're out and about. They want to buy gas. It's, you know, okay, fine.
I know. I think that's a little spin.
Well, it is. It is spin. I'm just trying to make people feel good.
We're not making the case for credentials or expertise. Just because someone teaches at Harvard doesn't mean he's wise or even smart. But when you open your segment on economics by saying, I talked to a public radio host who does a show with the word economics in the title, and here's what I learned. You're not trying very hard. Especially when his conclusion is, inflation is a measure of our success. Be grateful you can no longer afford to eat meat. You're doing your part for climate change. Things are going to change if this continues. You can believe that.
All right, so, yeah, Mayor Pete is actually the one that's supposed to be in charge of these cargo ships. So that's his domain. I don't know if people realized that up until recently, but, yeah, that's his job, is to make sure that those ports are working.
Yeah, it's crazy stuff that I've been seeing, this, you know, like maps showing like how many cargo ships are just sitting there in limbo. And, you know, this is, yeah, like you said, why Biden's being called Empty Shelf Biden now. And
Empty Shelf Joe.
Oh, Empty Shelf Joe, yeah. Empty Shelf Joe. That explains everything. But then meanwhile, I think it was yesterday, I have a very, very liberal friend that's all, you know, pro-masking, anti-Republican, rah-rah for Biden, you know, that person. You know who I'm talking about. I've talked about her before, the one that has a gas mask for a profile picture avatar. So she makes this post, you know, that, you know, Biden, you know, spoke about bringing back manufacturing jobs back and, you know, encouraging American independence and all that. And so she was, like, cheering for him, you know, and then she claimed that, you know, she's, but of course the Republicans aren't going to allow Biden to do anything good. They're going to do everything they can to stop him. And, you know, and then I, of course, chimed in. I'm like, but when Trump said the exact same thing, pretty sure you were one of the people that were against him.
You know? But she can't
use
that.
So when Biden says it, it's all good.
The Congress is run by Democrats, and the Senate has a one-person majority. So they don't need one Republican vote to get anything accomplished. So that's not a valid that would get them fact-checked.
Not on Facebook. But, yeah, I called her out for that. I'm like, Trump said the exact same thing. That was his goal.
That's
what he wanted to do. And the Democrats tried to stop him from doing anything good every step of the way. And you cheered for it when it was Trump that was getting stymied left and right with his pro-American independence message. But now that Biden's saying it, now all these leftists are like, you know, rah, 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 it's all good, you know, and then blaming Republicans, like, you know, like you said, it's like it's a Democrat majority here. And so how exactly do you think that Republicans are going to stop them, you know? It's such backwards thinking. Like, this is, you know, and I stay friends with her on Facebook just because she is such a good measure for that mindset that we are up against. You know, she's like a model for it, you know, and there's so many more like her, but that's why I stay friends with her, is just to see what kind of hypocrisy comes out of her next, you know?
Yeah, I got rid of all those types of people for the most part. Out of 5,000 friends, I might have 15 to 20. I will say I know I don't have more than 20 raging liberals. I probably have less than that.
For the most part, the liberal friends that I have on Facebook tend to be like the more rational ones that aren't like, you know, aren't so blinded by all this, and they're more reasonable. They are out there. They're few and far between, but they are out there. And other than that, I have a few that are the extreme left, but they're people that I know personally, you know, like former classmates, couple of former coworkers that even though they're super far left, they don't get all jerky about it, you know. They can discuss and comment, you know, without being, you know, insulting and you know, going off the rails like a lot of others do. And so that's another reason why I keep them, because I do know them personally. But then, you know, we can discuss things and have a difference of opinion and not go off the rails, you know. And
Off the rails for anything. So anyone that gets triggered and is offended by something I say, I just unfriend them. And then when they message me and complain that they got unfriended, I block them.
Well, good. You know, it's one of those things where, hey, you know, if you're going to completely lose your mind, you know, and be disrespectful, then, you know, why do you want to complain
about? Well, I've learned the hard
way
that I might say something and then end up in spy book jail. So why would I do that to myself when I could just get rid of them?
Yeah, exactly.
Too many people depend on me for me to tell a liberal off anymore, so... All I can do is just get rid of them and say thank you.
Exactly. Well, then, of course, now you saw that Facebook is now changing their policy on harassment. So they're going to be really cracking down on harassment now against politicians and celebrities and public figures. And, you know, and I
so
joked with
I
you when
if,
I saw that.
I wonder if having a radio show would help me, or maybe, well, we'll see. I've gone places where people knew who I was, and I had never met them before. So I'm a D-list celebrity, I guess. Maybe that counts.
Possibly. Possibly, yeah.
So let's
you know,
hope Brandon will be acceptable, but not not the other one.
Yeah. Unless, of course, they, you know, wise up and put that into their AI bot algorithm to also crack down on the Let's Go Brandon. And then anybody that's in sports that actually is named Brandon will start getting their posts removed when anybody says, Let's Go Brandon. I wouldn't want to have the name Brandon right now. But, yeah, it's like, you know, how lopsided is this going to be? Like, of course, Facebook is saying, oh, well, we're going to, you know, we're not going to discriminate. It doesn't matter who says it or who doesn't. We're going to crack down on this. And it's like, let's just give this some time. Let's see how many people can harass or, you know, like, remember all the photos that of the naked Trump statue that was put up, if you remember that, and that was all over the place. And I wonder if they'll crack down on anything like that. If somebody's posting anything like that about Trump, if they'll crack down on that. But if you post something about Biden similarly, if that gets you in jail. I'm leaning toward that there's going to be some prejudice there on Facebook's part.
You think there might be some liberal privilege?
Yes, I do. I can't help it. Can't imagine why I might think that.
Well, we just have to be recognizant that whenever we see it, we got to report it. Then the liberals will get upset.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's the only way
you know,
we win. We have to make the liberals upset instead of trying to placate them, and we always have to conform to their wants. So it's about time that they conform to us.
Yep, it can work both ways. You know, conservatives, libertarians, Republicans, we have been the brunt of hits from the insane far left, and they've gotten by with it with impunity. And so now it's time for us to give them a taste of their own medicine. If Facebook's going to truly be fair about this, like they said, well, let's start putting it to the test. And whenever you see some leftist that's, you know, cursing and, you know, making anything, you know, any kind of memes that are sexual, you know, sexual in nature about a conservative, report it, report it, report it. Let's put Facebook to the test. Dish out their own medicine.
Oh, I've had liberals tell me that I'm gay because I support Trump. Like, I voted for Trump. Now, all of a sudden, I think creepy dudes are cool. Yeah, that's not how it works.
Yep, that would be harassment.
Yes.
That would definitely be harassment. That's slander. So,
I've learned how to curse people out without using profanity and stay under the radar for the most part, unless I tell a your birthing partner joke.
the birthday, and then, you know, Michelle Obama, who's a fine lady.
Yes.
I know that could trigger some people.
Oh, I didn't say anything mean in that or rude. That's just, she's a nice lady. I say it all the time.
Oh, yeah. But we know
and
that
it's
you're,
never been fact-checked. It's never been fact-checked, so it's true.
Which is pretty funny. You know, and even if it is, you know, if it's 100% true, then why hide it? You know what I mean? If you know, if Michelle Obama was actually previously a male or something, then just come out and say it. If Barack Obama, you know, if he's married to a previous male, you know, person, then just come right out and say it. Why hide it?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, I can kind of see the case for, I mean, Michelle Obama, you know, she does seem to have more masculine qualities, so I can kind of see why people believe that. You know, it just, but who knows? I mean, there's a lot of women out there that are more masculine. You know, I'm not like, if you look at me, you know, personally, I'm, you know, I am not a super like, you know, foo-foo-y kind of girl. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm taller and stuff like that, but I definitely don't have an Adam's apple. And I mean, I think that if you look at me, you could tell I am a genuine female. I don't think that any kind of surgery could successfully make my kind of body. You know what I mean?
It just gets me that there are people that are pushing to make gender illegal. It's like, how is it that you're born with either a hole or a hole puncher that's illegal to say that you were born with a certain part? Or you have other people that want the words mother and father gone, and on a birth certificate or just being out in public, yeah, this is my parent one and parent two. I'm not calling
parent
my mother
one.
Parent two. I'm sorry.
Yeah, like who gets the parent one and parent two designation, right? You know, like how do you differentiate
The one that owns a hole puncher gets the parent one.
Usually. Oh, okay. Which then that's
unless
sexist.
A coin, I don't know.
You know, parent one, I think, should be who birthed the child. That should be parent one. The person
yeah,
that carries that baby in their belly for 9 months.
I don't know.
I don't know
which one is parent one or two. So maybe they'll say, just to make them both equal, one is parent one and the other one is parent A.
Yeah, I don't know how it works. It's too confusing for me. You know, I just get too confused. It's like, okay, identify with what you want, but you don't make it illegal for me to have basically, you know, basically how we have viewed male and female since the dawn of time. Of the first, you know, when we first started walking the earth. You know?
But what I can tell you, though, is that liberalism is not going to be here forever. At some point, us Republicans, who are the counterculture, I suppose, it's going to switch. There's no way that people will accept authoritarianism for their entire lives. And nobody likes it, but two-thirds of the public are too scared to say something about it. So they just comply. At some point, that's going to be done. And when it is, nobody's going to want to be on the Democrat Party. People will remember this. Right now, it doesn't hurt enough yet, but at some point it will. And people are going to remember.
Yeah, I'm thinking that it's going to self-implode. you know, the more this stuff goes on, the more they push for this tyranny, the more they push for this insanity, the more it's going to come upon that they're just going to self-implode. They're going to seal their own fate. And I hope that happens sooner rather than later, because I'd rather.
The regressives they're so progressive, they're going back to segregating.
Exactly.
How is segregation for progress?
It absolutely isn't. How is Oregon, you know, taking away the graduation requirements for high school of math and reading because supposedly that's racist? How is that at all right? That's taking a huge step back. You know, the same population of black people that 100 years ago fought to be able to have an education, you know, and fought for their right to be able to go to school, the same as with white people and have the same opportunities, and they fought so hard for it. Now they want to regress back and go, okay, yeah, you can get an education, but you don't have to be good at math and you don't have to be good at reading. You can still graduate. You know, that's just taking a huge step backwards. I mean, that just baffles my mind how that can be considered racist. That's how absolutely insane this mentality is becoming. I still can't believe that.
Well, anybody that graduates from Oregon is going to have a hard time getting a job if someone from any other state is available.
Yeah, exactly. Or schools, you know, if somebody graduates high school here in Oregon and they want to get into a high-profile school, you know, like Oxford or Stanford or something like that, Cambridge, do you think those schools are going to want to accept people coming in that didn't have to show proficiency with math and reading? I wouldn't think so. That's going to limit their opportunities. It's so dumb. And then I'm not sure if you saw now, not only are we dumbing down the students, now in Oregon, because there's a shortage of substitute teachers, Governor Brown, of course, has now reduced the requirement for a substitute teacher. So a substitute teacher doesn't even have to have a college degree anymore. Before, they had to have a four-year college degree. Now they don't have to have any college degree at all. They just have to graduate high school and be over 18 years old to be a substitute teacher.
And they also have to have a gene therapy, and they have to have their scam on at all times. That's the important part. No degree necessary. The degree of Pfizer and the scam over your face is the requirements.
Yes, and that's more important than having a bachelor's degree and knowing what the hell you're talking about when you're teaching kids. You know, that's another level of insanity. So, you know, dumb down the kids in school and dumb down their substitute teachers. Maybe I should apply to be like a social studies substitute teacher and like inject some constitution and civics in there. Oh, I'm covering for a teacher, for a social studies teacher for a week?
Right, but the important thing, though, is
let's read the Constitution.
If they can dumb everybody down, then they don't have to educate you. So that's what they want. They want a permanent slave class, if you will. If you don't know your rights, you're not going to argue for them. And if you know that protesting is bad, then you're just going to shut up and do what Rage Against the Machine tells you to do now, is do what they tell you.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw
now
that. Rage Against the Machine.
Yeah, they're rage with
is,
the machine now. Rage with,
yeah,
not
they're,
against.
They're
rage
requiring,
with the machine.
Well, let me tell the audience here. So Rage Against the Machine, the rap metal act that basically the poster people for screw the establishment, I'm an anarchist, they are now telling people to be completely compliant with government. So they should change their name to Rage for the Machine instead of Rage Against the Machine. So it's just sad that you see all these alternative and punk bands that are so compliant now.
Yeah, they their reputation has always been, being rebels, but they're completely reversing course and being the poster child for compliance.
I'm going to support the establishment so I could fight the establishment. That's the conundrum that the Rage Against the Machine fans will be in. And I don't know how many people out there, while Rage is traveling the country, where their fans are saying, I'm going to go ahead and get the gene therapy so I could spend $150 to see Rage Against the Machine for 90 minutes.
Definitely not worth it for me, that's for sure.
A lot of people think it's worth it for them, though. I said on my spy book earlier this week that this generation of kids that just graduated high school, they are the most compliant kids in the history of Earth. Usually, the 18 to 23-year-olds are considered rebels, and they fight for rights and stuff. But it's the 20-year-olds where I'm their parent, basically, and I do have a kid. My kids will be 18 and 20 in 2 weeks. So it's like, my dad's protesting. I don't want to be any part of that. That's the general consensus of kids nowadays. That the parents, it's like my generation, and we're the same age. We're the protesters out there. And the kids are the opposite. They are just compliant, and they're like, I can't believe mom and dad won't listen to the government.
Yeah, they just want to sit there and play their video games. Play their video games and chat with their friends, and, that's all they really care about now, instead of, back in our day where, college kids were the ones that were behind some huge movements. Think back to Vietnam War, It was that generation's college kids that were the heart of the anti-war protesting. And now it's like completely opposite. It's, the older people that are protesting this stuff because we know better, but this younger generation are just like, whatever. So long as I can play my, candy corn or whatever the hell it is on my smartphone, I'm cool.
So I don't know if I told you about this, but a few years ago at our family Christmas dinner, my older – I have two sisters and two brothers. I'm the oldest of five. And the next oldest one, which is my sister, her daughter told me, because she is a very devout Bernie fan, and I said I'm not into communism, and she said that I don't like communism because I'm too old to understand it.
As if communism is a new thing.
They must think so. I don't understand communism somehow. I'm just not old enough to get it, and I just couldn't believe what I heard.
When the exact opposite is true, you're old enough to know why communism is not a good thing, because communism has not had a very good history, especially when
it
comes to human rights.
Because the 99% has to be ruled by the 1% in order to make it work, and that never works. Communism does not help everybody get rich. It's like the 99% are poor together.
Yeah, and it's like, if you like having a choice about what cell phones that you get, you know, if you like having a choice about what gadgets you get, well, under communism, you're not going to get that. You know, you're gonna be limited in your choices because communism, the government's going to rule over everything. And the under communism, you're just not going to have as much choice. There's very little concept of free market. And competition, stuff like that. Elevate one company's stuff. Okay, here's what you get. Oh, and by the way, you have to get your news strictly from Facebook. We're not going to allow you, and we're going to restrict the apps that you can put on it. Like that's what communism does.
And then they're like, oh, well, that's so liberal. I love it.
Yeah. We shouldn't be able to have our own choice. You know, if we go to Google Play, you can, you know, you got your choice of every kind of app. If you want a notepad app, then you got a choice of countless different apps to use. But, you know, if you don't like that, if you don't like the free market and you want, you know, communism instead and you want the government to say, you know, this is the app that you're going to use for taking notes, then that's it.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw my meme before that I made, but it's like if you love communism so much, why is it that you're not renting a U-Haul and packing your stuff in it and driving to Cuba?
Exactly. Or Venezuela.
I don't know why these
U-Hauls, you know,
just don't get on the highway and drive to Cuba, because that's what they all should be doing.
Yeah, it's so ridiculous. Like, go there. If you say that, then go to a very communist country, live there for a year, and see what your preference is. And if you really like it so much, then stay there.
So here's one with radical leftists again. Violent leftists are actually in Washington, D.C. I don't know if you know that there's a protest going on. And the White House does not have the Capitol building does not have the fences around it. So they are protesting, demanding for the end of fossil fuels immediately. So they want nobody to have running cars. And a lot of them drove there, strangely enough, to say that.
Yeah, and probably got bus there too, and really big buses that got, you know, suck up a lot of gas too. I don't think they have a whole lot of. There's a whole lot of electric buses around either.
Yeah, I don't think that there's any Prius buses right now.
Not that I've seen. And you know, that's how a lot of them get there, is they, you know, go by bus. Get bussed in. Or they take,
that's,
you know,
true, because George
minivans
Soros paid
and stuff.
For it.
Of course. But get rid of fossil fuels. Okay. And then, but yet, here we go with China. China is upping production of coal because of their crisis going on. And it's like, okay.
Well,
the thing is that
China and Iran fully endorse the United States ending fossil fuels because it's more for them.
Exactly. And then it doesn't apply to them because they're not going to be a part of the Paris Accord and all this, you know, green change. They're not going to sign up for that. So whatever... You know, all of our, what, you know, quote-unquote Western nations combined that, you know, we can reduce our carbon emissions 75%, and that'll leave countries like China free rein to, oh, cool, you know, we can use it even more now, more for us. We'll just pollute, you know, as much, if not more, than all of these other countries combined, and then there's nothing that anybody can do about it. So, in effect, it makes no difference. In the long run, it makes no difference. But that benefits all the countries that are relying on China to make all their crap. So there you go.
Right, and it's so liberal, though. So if people have to eat bugs that are used to eating their meat, are people willing to go vegan for creepy, empty shelf Joe? And I don't know how many of these people are willing to necessarily go vegan.
I like, you know, I am way too much of a fan of my meat. I like my steaks. I like my chicken. I like my turkey. I like those things. I like butter. I like milk. You know? I like milk with my cereal. Yeah. You know, and I do like almond milk, but, you know, I really like almond milk quite a bit, but sometimes it's just not the same. You know, it just really isn't the same, like in cereal, for example. There's just a difference. And, you know, it's things like that. You know, fake butter, you know, margarine is gross. I don't like margarine at all. I want real butter, thank you. I like cheese.
Oh, I was thinking,
I don't
know if margarine qualifies as dairy, but you can get that ghee, G-H-E-E, ghee. Which
I've
is worse.
I've never even heard of it.
That's the vegan butter.
Ah, okay. Well, margarine is mostly hydrogenated vegetable oil. So what issue do they have with margarine?
I don't know, but they have a problem with honey also, though.
Which is so dumb. Honey is like one of the most healthy things you can eat.
Yes, but
if you get raw honey anyway.
If a bee provided the honey, then that is not kosher.
So stupid. You know, and it doesn't make sense to me. It's like, okay, fine, but you know, if that's what you want to do, if that's your choice, and whatever, but. Definitely don't be pushing that crap on me. I like my raw honey, thank you very much. You know?
Yeah, I like to mix my raw honey with cinnamon.
With what?
Cinnamon.
Oh, cinnamon, okay. Yeah, yeah. Cinnamon honey?
Yes.
That's good in some teas, yeah. I gotta have honey in my tea. That's like a must. Honey and lemon in my tea. Tea without it just doesn't taste right to me.
Oh, I use stevia.
Regular sugar, this doesn't taste right. Yeah, or stevia. Yeah, yeah, that's a natural sweetener. But I still want honey because I just love the flavor of honey in my tea. They just go together so well. I won't give that up. It would. Mm. You know, and then you have, you know, there's so many health benefits, too, to bee pollen as well. Bee pollen's really good for you. Get, you know, go to your farmer's market or, you know, local, you know, and put bee pollen, like, in your yogurt or whatever. And it's super, super good for you. That was one of those things when, you know, I've told you about my friend that, you know, had terminal cancer and stuff that I cared for, and I would get bee pollen and put that in his yogurt and stuff for the health benefits of it. I got him on that. At first he thought I was crazy because he'd never heard of, you know, eating bee pollen before. And it doesn't taste that great by itself, so that's why you got to mix it into something, you know. But the benefits of it are really, really good for you.
So Houston Cinema just over the last hour came out again, and she said she's not supporting either of the Democrats' Spendopolis bills.
Nice.
So we'll see if Mitt Romney decides to pick up that spot to help them pass what they want to pass.
He is such a chump. Of course he will. He's a rhino. Mitt Romney is like, if you want to know what a rhino is, Mitt Romney's the poster child for being a rhino. Couldn't stand him. He has no spine. He loves to yell, but he has no spine.
Yeah.
And I think that he's just a chump all the way around. Definitely glad that he never became president. I don't know which one is worse. Like I said, it's like, every time there's an election, it's like, okay, there's bad, and then there's even more bad to choose from, and that's about it. You know, it's just like that needs to change. I don't think our country can change if there isn't a complete overhaul with how the RNC and DNC operate and control everything. You know, it's so corrupt on every level. It's so in who they hoist up. You know, nobody gets the candidate that they really want, you know. I don't think nobody really wanted Biden. Nobody wanted Biden. Everybody I knew didn't want Biden that was Democrat, but they voted Biden because it wasn't Trump. You know, but nobody was like going, yay, Biden's, you know, the one that's going to be the candidate to vote for. You know, nobody wanted that.
So also with that, in Virginia, the liberal favorite, McAuliffe, he's close friends with Barry Satoro and Mr. Creepy. So there's been a lot of backlash about the cover-up of that kid that wore a dress into a ladies' room so that he can rape women, or girls, I should say. They're not old enough. And the school district and everybody involved covered this up and said it didn't happen. And they even called the girl's father that got raped a domestic terrorist because he was speaking out against his daughter being raped and called out the kid. The school pretended nothing happened. He transferred to another school because he felt traumatized, allegedly. And so he goes to another school and does the same exact thing, rapes another kid. Goes into the ladies' room because he's wearing a dress and goes in there and rapes. And now Virginia wants to rewrite the bill so that their parents cannot speak out like this one in Loudoun County is speaking out. So they want to make that a crime for speaking out. So I guess they're really trying hard to cover this stuff up. And by the way, this McAuliffe, he is actually trailing in the Virginia race for governor. So his people are trying to ask if they can get rid of the signature requirement for voting because they feel that the reason why their Democrat voters cannot vote is because they have to sign something. So if they get rid of the signatures, then people will feel more compelled to send in their votes, allegedly. Never heard of that before, but obviously we know where that's going. But, yeah, this McAuliffe guy, he says that it's racist to be against the critical race theory, and that makes you a domestic terrorist if you want to speak out and say that that's immoral. And you should have seen there was an encounter where a reporter asked him a question, and just like every other good Democrat, the only answers they have is why aren't you wearing a mask and did you get your gene therapy? That's all the questions they want to answer. They don't have other answers. They feel like that's the great equalizer. Have you been vaccinated? Now is the same thing as 10 years ago when they would ask you if you're racist. So they've changed that narrative. So, Lorianne, did I lose you?
No, I had to step away because I was, like, holding my need to go to the bathroom for too long.
Oh,
so,
that's
sorry,
right.
I was listening, but I was on mute so that nobody had to hear my activities.
Right. Oh, did you send me a message? I didn't see it. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I sent a message. I was like, hey, I got to go.
Oh, all right. I got you. All right.
But, yeah, like in regard to that story, I did kind of see something about that. And, you know, we predict what happened, you know, when with a whole move, you know, allow transgender biological males use the women's bathroom, like, this is the fear, and this is a realistic fear that now has come to fruition. And as you said, like, stories like that have been suppressed, you know, and not, you know, like, hush, hush, and don't say anything about it, you know, because they didn't want to show that our predictions came true, you know, and so this is kind of putting that to light, and you know that can't be the only story like that out there. You know what I mean? It's just, we just haven't heard about it, and this is just one of the first ones that's actually getting airtime.
All right, so let's do this. So you're back from the restroom. Let's take a time out. I'll let you handle the commercial break, and when we come back, Critic wants to join us. So is that cool?
Okay, good deal. Yeah, that's cool. I can certainly do the ad break.
All right. All right, we'll be
right
back.
All right, so, yep, stay tuned, everybody, and we're just going to play a couple ads here, and we'll be right back.
You realize there's something really wrong with our world. Things are not adding up. Well, you came to the right place. Tune in to the Right View radio show on Freedomizer Radio every Friday from 6 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time with your host, Jumana, where we connect the dots, uncover the truth, and expose those who are trying to usher in the new world order.
Hey, Freedomist, Proof here. Just want to let everybody know that I have a trusted source for EMF protection. So you can block out this 5G possibly from your cell phone or any other electronic devices. Go to groundwithgia.com and please check out the selection of products that you might need to help filter out all this electronic garbage that's going to get into your house and to your life. So most of us have cell phones except for me. You're going to want to protect yourself. We all have Wi-Fi, and you definitely want to do something about this. Please check it out. Groundwithgia.com. That's ground with
G-I-A, GIA.com.
Hello, my name is Christy Rose, and I'm the co-host of Mental Acumen here on Freedomizer Radio. I was trained as a health coach at the world's largest nutrition school, the Institute for Integrative Nutrition. I want to support you on your journey to a healthy mind-body connection. I believe the healthcare system is broken, and we need to play an active role in improving our health. We need to take a proactive approach to wellness. If you've struggled to lose weight or to maintain your weight, please consider reaching out to me because I was trained to look at people as individuals and to address the whole body and mind at once. Our bodies are more intelligent than our minds, and they try to scream for help in ways such as depression, acne, and fatigue. I can help you using natural holistic methods to get to the root issues and decrease or eliminate symptoms. I offer a free initial health history consultation, so please visit my website for more information or to schedule an appointment at CoachChristy.com. That's CoachChristie.com.
Tune in for the Lucid Libertarian with Lorianne Show, Sundays, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific Time, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern, to discuss current events, news, and political opinion with Lucid Libertarian flair. I promote liberty, freedom, our Constitution, Bill of Rights, and limited government, while speaking against corporate and government corruption, government overreach, tyranny, and the globalist Great Reset agenda that undermines our precious American sovereignty. Please check out my Lucid Libertarian with Lorianne page on Facebook, and as always, like and follow it. Thank you, and I hope listening to my show becomes part of your Sunday night routine. Sticking around with us. We are back, and Proof, you're there too, right?
I think so. So, yeah,
cool.
If you want to
sounds like
up,
you are.
If you want to open up Critic's microphone, I'm actually filling some gel caps right now. So I my hands are all full of powder.
Oh, okay. No problem. Hey, Critic.
Did I hear that ad right? Was that an ad for Diet Coke?
No, it's a spoof commercial called Woca-Cola.
Oh, okay. I was like,
yeah, Coca-Cola is not going to fund this, so I promise you that.
Oh. Yeah, it's a spoof ad. Always Woca-Cola. Diabetes is here to stay.
Just like G.I. Pat isn't going to sponsor us either.
Yeah, I was like, well, maybe I was just half listening. I'm like, this sounds like Diet Coke. I'm like, please start running ads for Coca-Cola.
No, there's probably should be a Woca-Cola brand that comes out that supports conservatives.
Anybody that makes something that supports conservatives would make a lot of money right now. I just can't believe there has not been a conservative challenger to Spybook. It's just really hard for somebody to create something that will take off.
Very true. I mean, oh, go ahead, critic. You're sounding really muffled again.
Gab, and what's the other one?
Parler?
Parler, yeah.
Parler is more like Twitter, though. It's much easier for these companies to create something that is equal to Twitter, because Twitter does not have all the bells and whistles that Spybook does. Like, there's groups, there's private messages, there's ways you could send money to each other. And it's more interactive, where Twitter, you're just posting something and then people make their comments and that's it.
Well, I don't know really about any of it, since I'm not on any social media, so I'm like proof when it comes to not having a cell phone. I have no social media account. Probably one of the few that don't.
You guys can excuse me for a second. I had to fill some gel caps, and my fingers are all full of powder. So if I can let you talk just for about 90 seconds, let me go wash my hands so I can use the keyboard and stuff again.
No problem at all. No problem. So, Critic, I haven't been listening. I don't know if you've called in this week, but what is any updates on how are you settling in after your move, and how are things going for you there? Because I've kind of been, I don't know if you heard, but I had jury duty, so I was pretty much like off the grid for the last 3 days. So how you doing?
Well, I'm still waiting for my furniture, but most of the detailed stuff that as far as getting that in place, I've gotten pretty much that in place, and I'm pretty much no more of a citizen of Washington State. I closed out my Medicare and Medicaid cases and stuff with that. So I pretty much the only thing that I have left that is left over in Washington, I still have a Washington ID. But everything else is, for the most part, except for my furniture, for the most part, I'm settling in.
So that still hasn't come yet?
No, I'm still waiting for a claim that's supposed to come this weekend.
Oh.
So we'll see. But for the most part, I'm pretty much getting used to St. George. It still takes me a little while to get used to when Proof brings me into the show and saying that now I'm from St. George, you know, after hearing Washington for so many years.
Yeah, that's a hard habit to break, isn't it? And it's kind of like when it's a new year and you have to start writing the new year's date and it takes you a while to get used to flipping that over.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be kind of similar with, you know, just by habit you write Washington for your address and you're like, nope, got to scribble that out.
Well, the only thing that's close to it now is that where the area that where I live actually used to be called Washington. But now it's part of a Incorporated St. George.
There's a Washington, Utah, which is right next to St. George.
Ah.
Well, it's kind of gotten smaller because it's kind of gotten more incorporated with St. George.
Yeah, because a lot of the growth actually went right up to the border of Washington and St. George, so it's just easier to say it's St. George. It is Washington County, though.
Well, the driver that actually brought me home today actually brought me up the hill where the old border was.
Because
it's this hill that you go up that and go down to, like, Riverside Drive that used to be part of, that used to be the border, but it's actually moved back some, or they're not actually sure where it's at, but that's what he was telling me.
And the nicer area of St. George, or a nice suburb, is called Ivins. I-V-I-N-S, Ivins. That's an up-and-coming area over there.
Is that, like, up in the hill area?
Where that lens is, you just keep going down that street.
Okay. Because there's a lot of areas that are, like, up in the hill. It's almost like mountains, but it's definitely, you can see the houses on top of the hills and stuff, and they look down over the valley. So, and that looks like more of a...
And then if you go, I'm trying to remember what that street is, Seacliffs Drive. If you go down that street where that Smith's is, and then you're on the way to Ivins when you make that left turn, if you keep going straight, you run into a bunch of other little towns, and eventually you run into a spot called Enterprise.
Well, Smith's on Riverside Drive, so.
Is that what that is? I don't remember the streets too well.
Yeah, it's called Riverside Drive. So if that's the street you're talking about.
That's the one with the Dixie Nutrition across the street.
Yeah.
All right.
Because that's the street they take me down to go to my dialysis, so. Because he told me where the post office was, actually. And if you keep going down that street, the post office is on there. Or at least the one that delivers my mail, at least anyway. But, yeah, for the most part, I'm pretty much settled, I would say.
Does that mean that you have most of your boxes unpacked and you got all your knickknacks put in place and your books on the bookshelf and all that?
I don't have a lot. I'm still waiting on my boxes and stuff with my furniture.
Yeah,
I have
the moving
some
van
boxes.
Is about 2 weeks late.
Yeah.
Oh.
I have this here that I ship by UPS, but I'm just taking my time with that stuff. I'm like, you know, why do I need to be rushing? You know, I'm just going at my
own. I have the same philosophy, and even though I got my house 6 years ago, I have a stack of boxes here in my computer room that I've never unpacked, and I got a few boxes in the closet in my bedroom that I never unpacked, and it's been 6 years because I have the same philosophy. What's the rest?
And it's a surprise when you get ready to move again that you probably don't need this stuff. That's what I realized with this move, that there's some things I was holding on to that I really didn't need or I should have thrown out anyway. So.
Yeah, I'm thinking these boxes I've never unpacked will be good, like, you know, garage sale material or donate material sometime. And, you know, some things like I have packed that, you know I have them and I might need to use them at some point, but... You know, and some things that, you know, are just more sentimental than anything else. But yeah, I have a lot of stuff that I could go through and make a donate pile or a garage sale pile sometime and get rid of when I, you know, since I haven't used any of it. As a matter of fact, like, I am so weird. I am the weirdest person you will ever meet when it comes to hanging up pictures. Some of those boxes are boxes of pictures that I just haven't hung up. I literally, the only thing I have hanging up on my walls right now in my house are my two TVs that are wall-mounted and my clocks. I have two clocks. And that's the only thing. I have a cup. couple of boxes of fixtures. I just haven't gotten around to hanging up. I got bare walls over here.
No,
that's how weird I am about it.
I did have at my apartment that I had before, this last place was, I did have a wall clock, and I did have a couple of paintings hanging on the wall, but I didn't really have anything else. One thing that kind of does piss me off, though, UPS lost my food processor, so I'm going to have to get another one. But I'm basically right now on the floor, so.
Oh, wow. Are they going to compensate you for losing that package? Or did they just say, you're SOL, go away?
Well, I put in a claim for UPS for them to investigate to find out what happened to it. So. I'm waiting for them to give me a credit for it or something like that. Because they asked me how much it was worth, and I told them. But I would say I'm pretty, for the most part, settled in. And I consider myself to be a Utahian or whatever you call Utah, like Washington is a Washingtonian. It's almost like I never even lived up there, to be honest with you, because it's so different from when I first moved up there. I mean, you really wouldn't recognize it.
Kind of a different world.
Well, yeah, the politics has changed so much. There's so many progressive thieves up there, it's just not funny. Because when I first moved up there, the grunge movement was big, you know, a lot of people were moving up there because of that show, the Northern Exposure, because it was filmed in that town up there, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yep. That is Grey's Anatomy. Grey's Anatomy has been on for a long time, and that's based up in Seattle. And so that made Seattle popular, too. And that show's been on for, God, I think like 14 years now or something. It's kind of crazy. I don't know why or how it's lasted that long, but it has.
People were following Kurt Cobain and all that stuff. And, when I first moved up there in the area. But now, progressive thieves have basically killed livelihood up there. So it's like all these other blue cities. It was time to get out. It was time to get out while the getting was good.
Yeah, I'm pretty glad that I moved away from Minnesota 25 years ago. And the last time I was there, I haven't been there for 8 years, but it's nothing like the place that I grew up in. Everywhere I go, it's nothing like it was, even in the Brainerd area where my grandparents on my dad's side lived, and at Gull Lake and stuff, and all around the area in Bloomington, which is right by the Mall of America, or what I call it, the Big Dumb Mall. Then the town that I graduated from high school at, Lakeville, when I moved there when I was like in ninth grade, then it was like almost nothing town. I mean, it was mostly farmland. And now it's just like, the freeway's totally expanded and it's totally sprawled out and there's stuff everywhere. And it's just like, it depressed me the last time that I was there, because it's just absolutely nothing is the way I remember it. And So I just don't even want to go back because, you know, I just, it feels like a completely foreign place to me. And same with the politics, like how you were saying, the politics have changed a lot too there. You know, like what, you know, the Brainerd area, you know, it was really pretty conservative when I was growing up, but it's completely flipped. You know, my sister that used to live there before she moved, you know, anyway, she sent me a story that that I think it's one of the Brainerd high schools recently just abandoned having homecoming queen and homecoming king because, you know, they went with something gender neutral now. You know, and I'm like, really? Up there in Brainerd? You know, they did this move. It's so crazy. It's like a foreign land to me now. So I totally understand what you're saying.
And I suppose WJM is not there anymore.
See, I've never lived in either Minnesota or the Pacific Northwest, so I feel like I'm not privy to this conversation.
Well, WJM was kind of a joke. That was the place where Mary Tyler Moore worked. Yeah.
Oh, all right.
But Seattle was pretty well known for the grunge scene. You know,
yeah,
like
Critic, I can't picture you, Critic, listening to Nirvana.
No, well, you know what, it's actually odd. I did work with somebody that actually grew up in the same town with Kurt and actually knew him when he was a little kid.
Oh, okay.
I actually asked about it, though, because first, I didn't put that together, but I knew she was from Aberdeen, and I knew he was from Aberdeen, and they were about the same age, if not the same exact age. So I just came out and asked her, did she know him? And she said, yeah, she did. She went to school. She said he was a stinky little boy when he was in school. But, no, I wasn't into that, you know, Mia Zapata or any of that, although I do remember the day that Kurt Cobain died, and I was coming from work from one of the bases. So,
okay.
Yeah, I do remember that. But, yeah, but I did actually work with somebody that actually did know him. But, yeah, that was big, and like I said, the Northern Exposure scene, everybody was coming up there because of that show at that time, and the Space Needle and the Coffee. Well, I'm trying to think. That museum hadn't been built yet at the time that I was up there. That came later. But that's what people were coming up to Seattle for at that time.
Yeah.
And
so Bianchi wants to come in and join us before it gets too late. I'm going to open up his microphone here.
Okay.
Sounds good. Welcome in, sir.
Hey, how are you? How are you, Critic? How's everything?
Bianchi, hey.
I'm settled. I'm settling down for the most part here in St. George.
Oh, okay. Well, if you need anybody to come move the piano, call me up. Me and Joe will come up here and move it for you.
Well, I'm still waiting for my sister, so.
Yeah. Hey, you know what I was going to ask you guys? This deal where the Biden administration, no, it was, well, the black farmers supposed to receive this, $5 billion or something like that? And there's some lawsuit filed, which I think are appropriate. So how are you going to give one particular skin color money and not give all the other farmers a claim if they have one? Isn't that kind of like discrimination?
Well, they said the same thing about the businesses, that they were going to help all the black and Hispanic business owners that lost money due to COVID.
Well, aren't they supposed to help all the businesses?
So that's what it used to be like, but it's...
You would think.
Well, it's like that book Animal Farm, where some people are... Everybody is equal, but some people are more equal.
Well, I tell you, you're getting to see some... this stuff is just sick. It's just totally, totally sick. And when people tell the story, they always talk about, well, blacks lost 100 and some odd million acres of land. I don't know if this is totally true or not. But, heck, that went on. Why did they lose the land? I don't know. I mean, everybody lose land, don't they? Hispanics lose land. Whites lose land. I've seen these stories before.
Well, look, don't forget, Bianchi, that there's a lot of liberals that think that the Mexicans should get California back.
Well, you know, I'm kind of worried about that. But, you know, they talk about 40 acres of in a mule. One of the reasons why I come was the Johnson, probably the reason why he rescinded on that, because it was Indian land. It was belonged to the creek, especially there in Georgia. So you're going to take land from one and give it to another? Take it from the Indians and give it to the blacks? Indians say it was taken from them. I guess I'm the only one to keep up with such things.
Maybe.
Sometimes
I haven't really followed
and
it.
Local
sometimes
news here
I
in
feel
Oregon,
like
the... Oh, go ahead.
I say sometimes I feel like the Maytag, man. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, recently here in Oregon, the Native American tribe got the Oregon City Falls area back. And that's, you know, historically pretty sacred ground to them. And so they recently got that whole, and like the Oregon City Falls is like a, you know, kind of like a landmark in the Portland area, if you know it. And it used to be a wood mill, wood processing mill, and then that business shut down. And so the Native American tribe, you know, fought pretty hard and won to get that land back. And so that's a pretty interesting development. And, you know, and I think that it's, you know, a righteous thing, because I think that they're going to, they have more vested in protecting that area than anybody else does. You know, and so, you know, and they're going to have some businesses there and things, you know. But I just think that they're going to take care of it a lot better than what's gone on in the past. So I actually think it's a good thing.
Well, they're going to be able to maintain it, or they're going to come back to the city to maintain it for.
Pretty sure they're planning on, you know, maintaining it internally. You know, it's kind of like not really reservation. I think that's kind of still in the works, too. But I think that that's what they're pushing for, too, is to kind of have that area treated like a reservation where, you know, that's theirs. And, you know, they'll manage it. That's what I think the whole point was.
Well, if they get Democrats out of the way and give it to other people to run, it'll probably run smooth.
That's what I'm thinking. Like I said, they have the most interest in preserving that area because of their heritage and for their future generations than anybody else does. So, you know, I'm all for that.
I wanted to ask a question to Bianchi, because you're in Louisiana. Did you see where the Louisiana Zoo is going to start giving COVID shots to all the animals?
Look, I'm not going to even comment on that. My mind is already bumbled up with enough ridiculous stuff. I'm not going to even go to the trouble.
Well, I meant to cover it today, so I'm going to spend 2 minutes with or without you here real quick. So
yeah.
The famous Audubon Zoo in New Orleans has announced that they're going to vaccinate every animal on their property. So it'll be primates this week, starting with the orangutans and gorillas. And then they'll work on all the cat family and mustelids. I have to admit, I don't know what a mustelid is. So it says that they're smaller but carnivorous animals like badgers, otters, weasels, ferrets, wolverines, and minks, which will also be vaccinated with the mustelids, but I've never seen one. But they said they got the approval from the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
But I guess they're going to vaccinate chickens next, huh?
Yeah, even though for sale, they're not allowed by law to give antibiotics allegedly to chickens, even though we all know what happens. Because any package of chicken that you read, it says that they're not allowed to give them antibiotics. But we all know what happens.
Well, yeah. So anyway, I'm not, you know, the longer you live, the more ridiculous is things that you hear, so I'm not going to.
Yeah, I'm just waiting for them to try and vaccinate the piranhas. Let them go after that kind of stuff. Let them try to vaccinate the crocodiles.
Or the pigeons.
Yeah, that would be funny.
Mm-hmm. But no, this thing with this, farmers compensation, I think that is really ridiculous. If you're gonna give you're gonna give some compensation, you have to go to everyone. You can't go to just black people only. That's discriminatory. But I guess Democrats don't give a damn.
No, they believe in total scorched earth. As long as they get what they want in the end, they don't care if they have to die for it, as long as they win.
Absolutely. That's basically what they do. Buy and vote. I was listening to a Detroit station, and they're concerned. Well, I tell you what, I was listening to Jesse Jackson's 80th birthday. It was live streaming. The people in the crowd, he had to be helped up to the podium to stand up.
Okay.
And he gave him three directions. One, every member here, go out and get 100 people to join Rainbow Push. Two, directive was to get registered. And the third directive is get vaccinated. And that was it. So people get registered, then they're told how to vote rather than just go vote. That sounds like voter suppression to me.
Yeah, they only want you to vote for who they tell you to instead of telling you that there's other candidates.
Absolutely. And then the question was that you got several cities that's majority black, like Detroit, Pontiac, some others they name, and they were disturbed that they had white mayors. Well, is it possible that the population done their homework and considered that the best candidate for what they want to see done with their city just so happens to have a white face? So what is the uproar? Of course, you know the
comment. Yeah, it's like what Proof was talking about earlier. You know, what Proof was kind of talking right along these lines. You're absolutely right. It's this being regressive instead of progressive. And now all the stuff that people of color fought for 50 years ago is just totally going backwards. And you know, a lot of them are cheering for it. You know, it's like, what? Why? You know, but most that I know are completely against it. I'm like, what the hell is this? You know,
and the sad thing
what are we fighting so much for?
The sad thing is that they're because they're so progressive, and they think that segregation is cool. Now it's going to happen again, and then you're going to spend 50 years to get your rights back.
Well, that's what they think. They act as if blacks is a separate nation here in the United States. They want their own schools, which in most urban public school districts, the entire district is black. Teachers, superintendents, mm-hmm. principals, and the children are a felon. Then they claim that the day you two are days. The days dummy down the curriculum. And little old me say, well, no, that's not true. When you read the state statutes, especially in Missouri, say that's your responsibility, you, the parents, the stakeholders, other words, the people. Oh, no, the state controls the curriculum. The state board is all white. So sometimes you get tired of hearing that stuff.
It gets old pretty fast, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Anyway, I don't want to let you guys know that you're getting blamed for yet another thing.
Yeah, that is true.
I'm going to continue to listen.
Well, there's not much time. We got 2 minutes left.
Oh, that's true.
Well, I'm going to bow out then. I'll see you guys maybe tomorrow.
All right.
Maybe we'll have a better story
be
to tell.
I won't be here tomorrow, but Jumana will be here.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'll be on Sunday.
So, Critic, any
Thanks,
last words tonight? Critic?
Oh, I think he called back in and then I didn't see that. Okay,
all
now
right,
he's on. Hi, Critic. You're back.
Yeah, my phone dropped me again. I got that same stupid message again tonight.
Oh.
I don't know what's going on with that. But, no, I didn't have any last words. Everyone, you know, hopefully, your gang will be able to come up this way next weekend.
Yeah, I'm hoping so. I guess we'll see what my wife's dad is doing, but I'm expecting to go. I'm ready to go. I want to get out of town for at least a day.
Yeah, just remember to call to get my address.
Well, we'll talk next week. I'm sure you'll call in once.
Yeah. So. But no, I don't have any last words.
All right. What about you, Lorianne? What do you have coming up on Sunday?
My Lucid Libertarian show, same time as this one on Sunday night, 6 to 9 p.m. Pacific. So tune in if you like, and I don't really know yet how the show is going to go. I don't know if I'll have a co-host or not, but I'll pull it together. 3 days of jury duty, and I can get back to normal the next couple of days and prepare, hopefully, a decent show.
All right. Well, thank you, both of you, for being here tonight. Everybody else, I'll be back on Monday. Please support the other shows on the network. It's not just the Proof Negative show here. But until Monday, hold on to the handrail, keep hope alive, and remember, only you can prevent forest fires.